Time to check in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for our second Tacky Talk of July. Tacky, how are you?
Hey Joe, good to see you. Good talking to you. Thank you for the rain.
I know we're back on it's Tuesday, so we're back on Tacky Tuesdays.
We are Tacky Tuesdays, and I had a, well, let's be honest, I had heat exhaustion during July 4th. It's been commented by multiple folks in the friend slash rumor slash chain of folks of like to gossip that I look like a drenched cat, and that is factual. We were looking through my social media picture options and realized that I look completely terrible. As you guys are aware, July 3rd and 4th, there are local events. I did stop in at the House Nick Family Fun Day, talked to some folks for like 45 minutes, about 10:30, scorching heat. Same thing happened in Saturday, 9 a.m. Adam Shore, congratulations to the scholarship recipients. As well as in Germantown for the 10 o'clock local parade and Gull Point Family Fun Day, which was very well attended. And the tide was coming in slowly, and we got a little bit of a breeze. I was getting a little comfortable. But then off to Marymount for actually 12:30 kickoff. I thought it was noon, actually, but it was a 12:30 kickoff with a parade. And at that point, 12:30 to 1:30, you're talking about high sun. And Marymount doesn't actually have that much shade in a walk. So, those Marymount route, it's like a mile and a quarter, give or take. And yeah, I was really, by that point, was really suffering. And I drank a lot of water. At one point, someone nice enough on Summit Ave let me reach into the cooler and just grab some ice and just threw one down the back of my shirt. I mean, my neck was swollen. I did heavily sunblock, and then the sunblock got into my eyes during the sweat process on Shore Ave on the way to Moffitt. And I was like blind for one point. So some people in the parade may have noticed that I was my glasses was off. I was throwing water in my eyes and trying to wipe it off of my shirt, which just made it worse.
Jeez.
Yeah, this is an occupational hazard, folks. But in my time, I've never been in a parade, fourth, a July 4th parade as brutal as it was this past weekend.
Oh, I think the heat index was like 112 or something. It was ridiculous.
It was absolutely insane. And, great job by everybody participating. But by the time I got to the third one of the day, and I mind you, I don't do Squantum because I don't represent Squantum. I was, in all honesty, I mean, we did go through my social media pictures and realized that I look like a dead cat. I mean, look bad.
Well, you've recovered nicely, thankfully.
Well, I'm still quite burned, actually. I'm not showing you those burns. But there is clear demarcation of color regarding where clothing and exposure to the sun is.
Well, hopefully that's the peak of the heat for the summer. I can't imagine it getting any hotter than that.
Well, it's still August,
That's true.
which is technically the worst month for us. But I mean, this rain is much needed. I know it's very hot and there was a lot of humidity, but there's a lot of evaporation too. And your lawn and my lawn are too isn't looking so good right now.
No, it's like hay. It's a hay field.
It is. Be careful again. I have a fire pit. People like to barbecue. You're on dry grass. It could be dangerous if you're not careful regarding the ashes. And as I kind of talked about this past weekend, I mean, I was exposed to a lot of sun, and we're marching. It isn't like it's that much physical activity. I'm not going to pretend I was doing a marathon here,
No,
but
but you don't have to in that kind of heat. Just being out in it is bad enough.
yeah, but I can't leave. I was down for the count on Sunday, just trying to get over the heat exhaustion. Just kept drinking more electrolytes, eating things like watermelon. So again, we warned constantly here during the summer months about the dangers. I did my best to try to mitigate between water, sunscreen, and electrolytes, and even then, that was Sunday was very hard.
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, it is summer now. I'm curious about, I know that you'd advocated for some increased state police patrols on Quincy Shore Drive.
Yeah, we voted for the budget. The governor has 10 days to sign the budget. We're still within the 10-day window. We do anticipate that the governor will sign that part of the budget. There's no guarantees the governor will approve our earmarks. I do understand, and I think we repeated multiple times, unpredictability of the federal government come the fiscal year October 1. And the governor has been expressed an interest in downsizing or hoarding money, depending how you want to frame it, on state funds, preparing for we're not entirely clear what's going to happen October 1. because the federal government isn't exactly great in communication about that. So I don't know if she's going to decide to try to even shave the budget further than we actually shaved from her recommendation. She did that last year. She shaved off quite a bit last time. We restored some of it and left some of it behind. And she still has 9C cut options if there is a legit revenue decline this fall. We're not sure what's going to play out exactly.
Right.
So we'll know around July 10th.
Okay.
Later today, they'll probably release the veto option. She may leave everything alone, or she may decide to cut some stuff. We do line item veto in Massachusetts. She does not have to veto the whole bill. She can pick and choose what she wants to veto.
Right. Okay. And it is an election year too, so maybe that'll have some effect. Who knows?
Yeah, as you guys are aware, we try to get a little bit of money here and there for local projects, local not-for-profits, and government, local government for important causes. And it's election cycle, and we're not going to pretend here. Getting some a couple bucks here and there for good organizations locally creates goodwill, and it's one of the things we can do when we have some extra money lying around. We did very well during ARPA. We did very well prior to COVID when there was more money available. But nowadays it's very confusing what's going on with our federal partner, and the federal government still represents about a third of our revenues.
Yeah, so that's significant for sure.
On the
Medicare
plus
is the
side,
biggest concern.
on the plus side, the World Cup is most likely going to show a very good revenue in restaurant taxes. Meals taxes,
Yep.
sales taxes, and for local government, the hotel motel tax. Because the state does not get the motel hotel tax. That is
Right.
municipal. Government gets the hotel motel tax, and in Boston, they have some additional fees regarding rental cars. That's special to Boston. So, there are hopefully a little bit of a tax boost, particularly at the municipal level, for this, well, the new fiscal year, because their fiscal year started at the beginning of June.
Right. Yep.
So, they should see that as part of this fiscal year. And, obviously, you may have seen the Howard Johnson, which I'm closest to, people having their flags of their various countries they support, getting onto the Wallston red line.
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah, and the Morocco team is staying at the Marriott in Quincy right now, actually.
Yeah, and that's extra hotel motel taxes for the city of Quincy. So, this has been a great one-time bump in revenue stream for municipalities. And again, I don't delve into the municipal budgets. I don't, mess with outside my
Sure.
lane, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's something the council and the mayors and boards of selectmen around the state that do have hotels and motels. Should really look at strongly probably sometime in the fall to see how they did.
Yeah, absolutely. Can we talk a little bit about these electric scooters, Tacky, that seem to be becoming more prevalent now, and whether or not there's any regulation or is there talk of regulating those things?
There's been talk about this on and off in building. The RMV does require licensing of vehicles that are above a certain speed. And electric scooters break a certain speed. I believe it's 30 mile an hour capacity,
Sounds right, yeah.
if I remember correctly. They have to be, get a plate, for lack of a better term, and treat it more like a motorcycle. But those that don't break that speed limit capacity doesn't. But if you
Okay.
watch Chronicle and Channel 5 at one point, they actually did discuss how electric bikes in particular can remove the limiter on your own, and then
Oh.
suddenly you can do like 45.
Oh, really? Oh my
Yeah,
goodness.
depending on the bike, right? And you want to soup it up yourself, obviously. So the issue I think that a lot of people see is that they're on sidewalks, moving at like 15 miles an hour.
Yeah.
The bike lanes in Quincy, weren't really meant for that speed either. And they're also non-contiguous. And Boston's
Right.
the same issue. They're not contiguous bike lanes.
Right, it just ends at some point, yeah.
It ends at some point, and it gets a little confusing. It isn't like
Yeah.
we're riding our bikes at under 10 miles an hour, on sidewalks. And sidewalks are pretty wide in Quincy in the main roads, which is nice. So, I'm not. We've some people have filed bills on and off over the past 4 years about electric bike regulation. I think at one point of discussion went up to the Econ Dev bill. But well, I'm not sure how to manage that one, to be honest with you, because you could change the speed limiter down to like 20. But it's also a local enforcement issue. I mean, does that count as a moving vehicle using a pedestrian way?
Okay, so it's another case of the technology got ahead of the regulation, unfortunately.
And they're not cheap. Electric bikes, like $5,000.
Are they really? Oh.
Yeah, I ridden one some years back, and it's a demo. And I asked how much it was. They were like, the starting model is like 3.5. But you really need to go to to the better models, which are five.
Wow, I had no idea. My goodness.
Yeah, I'm not spending $5,000.
No, I had no idea. I think of a, I guess I th thought they were like regular bikes, only with a little motor, but apparently they're much more than that.
They're not mopeds. This is not the days of a strapping on the lawnmower engine to
That's
your bike.
right. Okay. Hey, you mentioned economic development bill. Is that coming up this week?
We're voting. We're going to be debating that tomorrow.
Ah, okay.
Tomorrow's Wednesday. Our debate days are generally Wednesday, perhaps Thursdays. As we close into the end of session, particularly the last 10 days, there's potential we could be in every day. So they're going to put us more on call with 24-hour notice of session. As you can imagine, nothing's more fun when you get a notice on 5 p.m. that you're coming in the next
You have
morning.
to be in there the next morning at 9 o'clock. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't. This is not a job where you would appreciate predictability of schedule, particularly
Right,
when.
right.
So, it's anything could happen scenario in July and scheduling. Which means, as you can imagine, we end up rescheduling a lot of things as a result, whether it be meetings, district meeting events locally, canceling meeting events, and then there's a whole lot of juggling around, including my personal life. Things have changed in my life, as you know, and I have more friends reaching out that want to spend a little time with me to check in on how I'm doing. And there's going to be a lot of that moving parts too. So, we'll see how it plays, but it's about a $350 million bond, which is not a lot of bond money. It's predominantly a lot of policy issues of various forms. There's about 600 some odd amendments to add mostly policy issues. Not a lot of cash. There's not really cash on the table here. Sometimes you can there's a little bit of cash, a little bit of bond, but mostly bond. And there's not a lot of major reforms Mike glanced through thus far on the bill. It's actually going to be easy to talk about it after debate, largely once we get through the 600 plus amendments, and whether or not they're going to allow additional public policy. As you guys are aware, and I keep talking about it over and over again, I'm trying to get a lot of small technical bills on things like veterinarian licensing sequence consistency into this bill. That does affect the economy because the licensing time frame renews and veterinarians are birthday as opposed to annual, and they
I
want
see.
to phase themselves into an annual system so everybody knows when exactly they're going to have to renew the licenses.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
So small things like that. So I have a lot of those kind of similar bills. We'll see if I can get into like the technical correction bill to allow people with pets to keep their pets in senior housing complexes.
Oh, all right. Okay.
That's a bill I'm trying to see I can sneak into the econ dev bill too. So I got a bunch of amendments that I consider non-controversial, and I hope you guys think are non-controversial based on what I just said on two of these amendments that I can somehow sneak through.
Ah, all right. This is getting an insight into the legislative process here.
Well, if I can't get it done through July 31st, and I still believe these are non-controversial, I can do it by informal session.
Yes.
And I said this last call, well, together, the amount of phone calls I'm dealing with between Christmas and New Year's, you guys have no idea. It's like, trying to make something happen
Right.
between the holiday period.
Although that's a risk, because if there's one objection, that kills it, right?
That is correct, which is why
Yeah.
we prefer to get things done by July 31st.
Sure. Yeah.
But it is one of those things. And, swearing in day, I believe, is like January 7th. So you actually have the holiday plus a few extra days after the new year to try to get something out of the state house onto the governor's desk. So,
Yeah.
people under the impression somewhat that we don't do anything if there's no session. However, if you've been doing this job and you know how to do this job, there's an opportunity. So it's just timing the opportunity correctly.
Right. I think there's a housing bill still pending too, is there not?
I'm not sure what that one is.
Okay.
The housing bill, there's a health care bill. Both of those are kind of sitting out there.
Yeah.
A couple of animal rights bills that I'm not quite sure we're doing either. There's a lot of unpredictability at this point. I had expected, for example, econ dev to be done in June, July, much to my surprise. We're doing it July. Not unheard of, but for me, it's surprising. I wish I had a better way to describe the schedule, but I truly can't explain how things are playing out. And
Sounds like it's pretty haphazard, yeah. And there's an energy bill too, still out there.
yeah, the Senate debated that last week.
Finally, yes, I know.
So it goes to conference. So
Yeah.
I know I keep repeating myself in the show, but conference committees do not have to report by July 31st. They can report after July 31st, and they can bring us back into session.
Right.
Which again puts us back on call during a campaign cycle, as well as perhaps you're on a holiday if you don't have a campaign. And the reason these rules were put into place, the policy reason that all things end July 31st, one of the reasons was to prevent shenanigans during campaign season where an incumbent could try to pass something locally or some funding. Going into the November election, that the opponent will see as an unfair advantage.
Like 2 days before the election or something.
Yeah, or may, well, these days a little longer because of how press cycles work. You could time, let's say, a $5 million earmark as a small supplemental budget moving through for your favorite candidate, and your opponent be like, "Oh, your political shenanigans and."
Oh, they pounce right on that, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, people at home only hear the word 5 million, so
Right.
it creates actually somewhat of a disadvantage for incumbents.
Hey, let's talk about the economy for a bit.
Sure, it's expensive.
That's the understatement of the I think last, well, we were just wrapping up last week, we were talking about some of the job numbers that were coming in.
Yeah, job numbers aren't bad. I mean, unemployment went from 4.3 to 4.2, but it's still very high throughout the Trump administration. Job creation has been happening, but they're very, very inconsistent. Every few months, they keep shifting around between government and healthcare and hospitality. And one of the surprises, particularly the World Cup in play, was that there's less hiring in hospitality. There was no spike in that. Government. Particularly, local government has been a high driver for hires because of attrition. People just retire. And we saw that after COVID. There was a high mass exit of folks in healthcare and in government in particular. So both those sectors continue to hire. But there's a very stable in the sense that there's not a lot of new applicants for unemployment. These numbers could get revised again, as we know. People on unemployment has been steady. That's the number I'm always most interested in, is how many people still on there. If the number doesn't move, it means that equal number in, equal number out, give or take, right? It's no nice number. But if it's like it's 1 million people, but it's 1 million people again, that's not off unemployment. That means anybody got on also got off.
Because it's not growing, right?
It's not growing. So there isn't like a massive growth on retention. People are still able to get jobs and new people get on. So it's steady. Ideally, you want to see unemployment closer to 3%, which means close to maximum employment in this country. So, it is concerning that the employment rate's over 4%, but it's really concerning about whether or not people are staying on unemployment longer. And I think that's the real question.
Yeah, I can't help but wonder how much of an impact AI is having on that now.
It's a really good question. It's unclear how much because those things is a gradual unfolding, and you really don't know until months, maybe years later. It's like how I talk about inflation. You don't see it right away. It takes time for that to unfold. So AI is the same way. And there is a statistic out there that talks about the fact that a lot of businesses latched onto AI immediately the MIT study on this. And then within a year, they latched off of it because they didn't get the productivity they thought they would,
That's right.
which can result in rehires if they were rash on implementation. And people have asked me about AI stocks, so these, Open AI and Claude and other, oh, Anthropic, all these other companies. And I remind folks often that, we only have two operating systems, Apple and Microsoft.
That's it.
And we're only down to really one true word processor, Microsoft Word. Businesses and consumers aren't interested in paying for more than one product that does the same thing or similar.
That's right.
So, I mean, at some point down the road on artificial intelligence, there will be a consolidation largely driven by consumers, that they're going to go in this direction, and that's it. And the other ones will fall to the wayside. It'll be merged. People may remember Beta and VHS, 9-track and cassettes, Laserdisc versus CDs. Consumers largely drive how technology changes. And sometimes when government changes things like fuel efficiency, consumers are now interested to get best value for vehicle based on fuel efficiency, that regardless of what the politics of it is. I mean, you may think fuel efficiency is terrible, but most people like to save money.
That's what it comes down to. They call it kitchen table politics, and it's really true.
And it's very consumer driven. As I just described, things that if you're old enough, remember. But this is going to happen to artificial intelligence. It's not going to happen today or tomorrow, but as it continues to unfold, I see artificial intelligence companies to consolidate based on what consumers want. And that's why, I think it's really a crapshoot of how you're going to put your money down on this stuff. And talk to your financial advisor about this, regarding your risk tolerance and your retirement funds. But that's my view on technology in general, is that consumers will drive to a certain degree consumer products, and they don't want to buy more than one. The Google various eyewear has come and gone regarding technology. Google glasses have been canceled, but Meta's put a new one out. We'll see if people willing to fork over big money, and even more money if you're like myself, that is prescription glasses, on how that works. So, well, swing back to unemployment for one brief minute. Massachusetts unemployment's at 4.5%, slightly higher than the state average, but put in perspective, it peaked at 4.8% in February.
Okay, so it's come
Now,
down some.
yeah, for this year, we're obviously only 6 months in. So, in Massachusetts, the most job growth was in government, education, transportation, information tech, and professional services. No, leisure and hospitality actually had a decline. That was April to May, though. So these numbers may flip on its head in June because of the World Cup. So we'll see what the August figures come out, and then take a backward look. So give you an idea of how these job numbers are very unpredictable, is that there's always a bit of a delay versus what we see today.
Interesting. Okay, so it's kind of tenuous at best right now.
Yes, and wage growth is very important because wage growth is tied to inflation. If wage growth isn't beating inflation, obviously workers lose. And inflation's at 4.2, and wage growth was at 3.1.
That's a clear loss for consumers,
It is. And in the K-shaped economy continues. There's no economist that has not said it's not a K-shaped economy, where people at the high end of the food chain is representing 50% of consumer spending, give or take. And the rest of us are trying to make up the difference at the bottom end. But it's a very small percentage of folks that's really driving the consumer economy. And small businesses represents nearly half the GDP of the country. And small businesses, is the lifeblood of the consumer economy. So, we'll see how it plays out. And I'm not, can't predict what's going on because, obviously Iran just shot at Saudi oil tankers or
I
transport
saw
tankers
that,
today. There's a lot of unsettlement in Middle East still. The U.S. has not withdrawn forces. We're still floating around out there, always ready to strike. There's so much global uncertainty and tension that actually has a ripple effect on energy markets and consumer goods. Like, I don't know when the aluminum price strike will happen, because so much aluminum comes out of the area. And as I said before, fertilizers, half the country didn't buy the fertilizer in time before the war started. And it may result in shortages of certain products, and may result in spike in certain products, agricultural products domestically.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly gas prices have come down a little, but not dramatically.
Yeah, anywhere from like 357 to as much as like 410, 415.
Yeah.
It's really a broad range I've noticed this past week,
Yeah.
driving around, depending where you are and on the price structure of gasoline. And if you're buying premium and above, it's really like a buck more than regular.
Yeah.
So premium above really is hurting you a lot more than I remember. So, but yeah, they could switch in a moment's notice. I noticed when it went under $4, the gas lines were pretty high.
People thought they were getting a deal.
Yeah, get in before the next unpredictable move on gas prices.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I wish I had a better statement, but we'll wait and see. And and travel to Europe continues to be very tenuous for people from this country, because you don't know if there's a plane right back, because the fuel shortage is still there until a new fuel shows up so it can refine it. And that's a time delay, because it takes time for a tanker to get point A to point B, plus you have refining time.
Right, exactly, yeah. And there's talk about in the Fed about maybe raising rates this year.
Yeah, Kevin Warsh actually was very much about lowering rates, and he still is convinced artificial intelligence is going to compensate for job losses and continue to grow this economy and create more efficiency, very much like how the internet has. But the internet also took a long time to create that efficiency. It wasn't like instantly in 1999 that suddenly, we had massive efficiency in businesses. And AI is not the same as the dot-com. It's different. Because the nature of the business engaged in it, there is a lot of risk, because they're putting a lot of money out there, and it's more money that I think any of us ever could conceive. But is the money still going to be there later on for these businesses to make the massive investments, or you're going to deal with people, countries like China that just dump government money nonstop into it?
Right. Yep.
And it creates some good questions. And Walsh, was brought in under the belief he was going to lower rates, but the unemployment rate staying above 4%. And inflation staying above 4%, has really made, a potential battle on the Federal Reserve Board about what to do next. And I'm doubtful they're going to raise rates unless the board really makes a hard push against Walsh. And then he's got a problem, because the misconception is that the chair dictates and everyone just kind of follows along. It's not, it's a board, and it's a rotating board for a reason in terms of the Federal Reserve banks. And all the various Federal Reserve banks does independent data, plus the Fed, main Federal Reserve bank, the central bank, also does its own independent data analysis. Plus the fact they get the government data, and the government data is they get actually the same time we get into public. They don't get
Yeah.
advanced peaks. So they kind of have to respond on a lot of different data sets, plus the public getting data. They get into the same time as the public does on things like jobs and other information that the federal government provides. So, yes, I don't expect rates to change quickly. If they go up, I'll be very surprised. And there's the politics of this. I mean, the president's been trying to run the Federal Reserve, not the first president. Almost every president has tried to run the Federal Reserve. But as I like to say, in politics, you're very moving, try to convince voters to go with you. But there's the long-term consequences, and whether you're willing to withstand voter upset to try to prevent negative consequences down the road, because you have to pay the piper. But
Right.
I can't speak for individuals, but everyone has a different opinion of how that works. Do I do something to keep people happy now, but I know I'm going to pay the price later, or do I pay the price now and tomorrow will be, it'll be more stable? But it's generally how people do people actually think backward and forward enough as individuals. And obviously, I'm in the business. I actually have to pay a lot of attention to stuff.
Sure.
But I mean, everybody's thinks differently, and it's elected officials. It's hard to gauge that, because I do recognize that everybody's an independent individual thinker.
Yep. So I see the DCR is out replacing sidewalks on Quincy Shore Drive.
In parts of Fredericksburg Parkway, if I'm not wrong.
Yay! Are you getting your new street lights finally?
Still working on it. National Grid has finally got the inventory up. They have underground electrical problems on Fredericksburg Parkway. I'm still very upset about this. Anytime there's a major storm, it delays any opportunity to do that and to redirect resources away that could be used to help bring up the streetlights. The sidewalk it's nice. I mean, there's a new sidewalk replacement isn't new. People may have noticed there's new sidewalks up in the northern side of Crenshaw Drive. That's Bruce's Party District. It's been an ongoing thing for years. Frenchbrook Parkway, heading towards Crenshaw Drive, they're getting new sidewalks as well. It's a bit of a mishmash for years between concrete and asphalt. Those that live near the intersection of Adams and Frenchbrook Parkway has received new sidewalks on both sides last summer. So it's great that we reached our part of the schedule on capital projects, plus National Grid on the state roads on Frenchbrook Parkway is actually pretty good. You got to be mindful of the fact that there's a high water table, so it's always going to be a little uneven. But they did a pretty good job on that. Well, Newport Ave is not a state road. I do drive it too, and there's a little frustration there, but it's gonna work out well once everything's done. And they want to go as far as Frenchbrook, so that's part of the National Grid component. And I'm not sure if the city had extra requests to National Grid.
Yeah, I don't know that either. I'm not sure
Yeah, I
that.
don't know if there was special requests or not. Again, there's gonna be a lot of discomfort from folks, and I'm sure I'm gonna get complaints because we always do on the process. But once things are done by the fall and hopefully done properly, it's done properly, I think people will be fine with it.
This is all part of that underground cable replacement project that was all the way from North Quincy up to behind the police station.
For refresher, there's an underground cable transmission line that goes through the middle part of the city. It was put in there I think 51 years ago, the original cable. It involves it actually has a liquid in cable insulation in there, so they had to rip up the road multiple times over the 4 years, where they had to put a new cable, close it up for the winter, go back again. Then once they connect the new cable, so power isn't interrupted, then they have to remove the old cable, which is draining out the liquid, and incrementally moving the old cable out. You can't just rip it out and just, lift it up. You have to cut, remove, and you have to drain it. So same thing with insulation. It isn't just like, we're gonna cut through like 4 miles of road and just drop this giant cable. It's all incremental. And then you have to, properly insulate these cables as well. And of course, we live in a saltwater area, so it has to be proper insulation. And that's why the project takes so long, and there was no interruption of power through the process. But as you can imagine, you got to get this thing in over many miles, then take the other one out over many miles and make sure nothing goes wrong in the middle.
That's right. Yeah, massive project. That's been for, 3 or 4 years, I think.
It has. People don't appreciate it unless you lose your power because they screwed up until they get angry. When nothing goes wrong, you don't really appreciate it because you saw nothing wrong.
That's right. Well, so far so good. Knock on wood.
Yeah, and it's again, it's over 50 years old, and it was due for replacement anyway. It needed to be done.
That's right. So little pain in the beginning, and then hopefully some positive outcomes in the end.
And success is not necessarily the road, but also very smooth and uninterrupted service.
Exactly. Yes. You mentioned the attack on the Strait of Hormuz. We haven't talked a lot about the Russia-Ukraine situation in a while.
Ukraine actually has penetrating deep into Russia in
They
its
are
oil
getting
refinery.
pretty feisty.
They really brought the fight to the Russian people, focusing mostly on infrastructure. Drones again has completely changed how we combat warfare. We always talk about open border problems in warfare. In Europe, if you look at a map, there's no way anybody can secure a border 100% no matter what you do. So obviously, a drone attack's a much easier to sneak through. Same thing on Russians trying to get through to the other side, trying to sneak their guys across the border on small numbers with drones. It's not like you're bringing a battalion in; you're trying to sneak over like three people, and then bring your equipment with you. And it looks like there's a whole lot of question marks about movement of the Donbass and whether or not the Ukrainians can make the push. Crimea has been called on lockdown already. Regarding Ukrainian attacks on Crimea, and the Russian Navy is pretty much useless in the Black Sea. and this, lack of a better term, spunky country using asymmetric warfare has really become a lesson for all countries and sadly terrorist groups, how to conduct modern warfare today. And the days of saying you blew up someone's air force or navy has proven to be not the essential component. And they have like their own short range cruise missiles development in their own country. They're making their own weapons. They're not just buying other people's weapons. And they're innovating on very little money, a lot of short range tech, which in their case is fine. I mean, they're fighting a land war. But the fact they can penetrate past Moscow now to oil refineries is actually causing a gas shortage in Russia. Consumers in Russia is feeling the pain, like the rest of us regarding high price gas prices. And they're a pretty poor country. Russia is not wealthy. So, there is a lot of pressure in Russia right now, on, the propaganda versus the reality. And the Ukrainians are claiming now they can hit Siberia, which actually has a lot of oil refineries and oil pumping stations in Siberia, which is part of the Russian lifeline on money. And the Iran war, the US government had unintentionally, or maybe intentionally, I have no idea anymore, but I think it was unintentional, raised oil prices for Russia. So they got an infusion of cash for the war. But now they're getting, refineries hit. And Russian people are paying the price for the first time at the pump for this war. And this can be pretty. I think the next year, going into next summer in particular, is going to be the big crunch whether or not there's a make or break here on what happens next. And I say that because if you're aware, they have to move in seasonal combat. When the place turns to mud, nobody goes anywhere. They just stuff at each other as opposed to making ground movement. So we'll see how it goes. And again, Ukraine has a still has an air force somehow. It's not big air force, but as long as they stay inside Ukrainian airspace, they shoot down drones, missiles, and harass Russian fighters. It's quite remarkable.
It is to see their fight for independence, yeah, for
Yeah,
sure.
and the Russians continue to hit civilian targets in Kyiv in particular now. They're really just actually bashing civilian targets. While Ukraine has, I don't know if intentional or unintentional, has hit some civilian targets, they're predominantly hitting oil refineries and infrastructures.
So in the meantime, North Korea's rattling sabers again.
They're looking for something. They always do that. I mean, when North Korea makes noise, looking for some kind of concession. But this Kim is a little bit tricky because they're not great at communicating what they're looking for. And they're not happy with the Japanese, which is rearming. If you know your history in the Pacific, Japanese rearmament generally is bad news for everyone around you. But this time, everyone around you is also armed to the teeth. So it's not as not it was like pre-World War II. They're kind of being increasingly isolated. I mean, they're playing a political game between China and Russia, playing one off against each other, trying to get the best deal they can. And North Korea continues to be a very much impoverished country with no real access to energy. The whole place isn't really great for renewables, and it's too dark and cloudy, and the wind's kind of weird because it's all mountainy. And they have pretty much like the whole peninsula has no access to fossil fuels. It's all imported. And uranium is crucial in nuclear power plants to create more independence. But then you have the ability to create nuclear weapons, which is what they've already started doing. They've done their testing. So, their objective is to try to get, a ballistic missile, that can hit, somewhere a little further away than Japan. And Iran had proven they can get missiles. Much further away when they took unsuccessful shots at the U.S. military base in the Indian Ocean. I think it's the Kurag Islands.
That sounds right, yeah.
Even though the ballistics didn't hit the island, the fact that they had the capacity to get that far is concerning. And the North Koreans want the same capacity.
Yep. This global unrest, as they say, for sure.
All it takes is one strike to scare a population.
It's more emotional warfare, really. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and what they're hoping for North Korea is that there's a continue removal of forces from the Pacific theater, which is a lot of it sitting in Iran right now, which creates more vulnerabilities for local. And then all countries have noticed that as a result of this war, U.S. munitions, including anti-ballistic missiles like the Patriot missiles and others, the U.S. is going to have to restock power our own. And may limit the amount of ability to others. And those guys already put contracts down to buy from Raytheon and Lockheed and others for this stuff. And whether the US government wants to prioritize us first or you dump even more money to the defense industry to try to ramp production. But I mean, a Patriot missile can take 18 plus months to build.
Yes, yep.
You know,
So.
unless you go to a full wartime economy like Russia has, and we're not. And Russia's economy is completely dependent on this war.
Right.
Government spending is the biggest part of the Russian economy, and we're not like that here, and I don't see that happening.
Oh boy, more questions than answers. And now, and the NATO summit is underway today, actually.
Yeah, Erdogan, the president of Turkey, and Trump has really kind of renewed the relationship. It's had some cooling and warming, but right now in a warm zone. And you may remember that the way out of the Black Sea is con that that. Canal is controlled by Turkey, which they have blocked, keeping Russian vessels from coming out of into and out of the Black Sea, basically containing them. And obviously, the British controlled the Strait of Gibraltar, which meant, and then you got the Finns and Norwegians on the other side on the North Sea. So, what little Russian Navy has, they can't really move around easily unless they try to go through the Arctic Circle. So, Erdogan is still a key player, and he's proven himself a negotiator in the Middle East as well. And we'll see how whether they can cut a deal. And Turkey is an essential NATO member geographically, and also one of the bigger militaries in that area. But you're also aware that Erdogan's government is not exactly the most open government, and has a lot of suppression with local population. We'll see how it goes. Because if there's an attempt to create wedges in NATO, Trump could potentially try to create a wedge. But is that truly in the best interest of Turkey to find itself not with NATO? Because it creates enormous security for them as well.
Yeah, they're an interesting. They're kind of like the gateway between the Western Europe, Eastern Europe, really. They're right there in the middle.
Istanbul, demarcates where Asia and Europe begins. I mean, it's arbitrary in some ways, but historically that's the location for thousands of years. The Turkey and the predecessor, the Ottoman Empire, is, you're right, the crucial trade choke point. Now they're a national security component in terms of regional security. They're actually a very important partner. On like so many different levels regionally, but also at the same time, though, they take a blunt for example, take a brunt for example in Syrian refugees. People in this country think it's a unique American issue regarding border issues. It's not. Syrians cross through Turkey to try to get to Europe, and Erdogan actually did the whole "we'll just let you through and become someone else's problem," which upset a lot of Eastern European countries. See how it goes. And Trump's had some following out. I mean, he upset the Italian people and its right-wing government when he said that the president was begging to take a picture with them.
I remember, yeah.
And that pretty much soured and killed that relationship that was actually pretty good when basically you demean another country's leader. And frankly, the population, regardless of political spectrum, collectively felt demeaned. There are certain things, and I hope we can learn this too at a little level, is at some levels that regardless of political spectrum, when you insult a foreign leader, you insult their country.
Well, the majority voted for that person, so therefore you've insulted the majority of the electorate at that time.
Well, and I do think regardless of political spectrum, people do have pride in your country. In Europe, that happens to be very much so. So, I mean, he's losing his allies, and Starmer's out as prime minister in England, and their inability to hold a prime minister more than a couple of years is continues to be fascinating in British politics. And we'll see what this guy Burgum is Burgum is going to be able to do better than Starmer. And they still have a super majority in Parliament, and they're not due for an election soon. So there's also a lot of questions because, unlike here, the local political party, which you pay to be a member and you have to maintain your membership good standing, elects the party leader, and the party leader becomes a parliamentary leader. So they're bypassing some of those processes in England. And as you can, politics being politics, they're trying to decide the Labour Party in Parliament how they're going to try to balance the interests of the party membership in Parliament, but also keeping the democratic structure inside their own party valid. And continuing to keep that mandate. So, again, very different from the US on how they do that. And it's not like it's a primary, it's a very small group of folks relative to the size of the country to pay to be party members and maintain good standing. So, there's that constituency they have to serve both ways. So there's a lot of fun things going on in Europe. Some of those old Eastern Bloc countries have had leadership changes, huge questions of what it means regarding European, US, and Russian relations. And the Japanese, are looking to really try to, stimulate their economy. They're suffering from a weak yen against the dollar, and the economy has some inflation, and their interest rates are going up. And they're trying to, militarize because of lack of faith of the U.S. support, even though the Japanese Prime Minister is actually very friendly with the president. So there's a lot of global moving parts here. Does it affect you at home? Maybe.
Eventually.
Yeah, eventually, what happens on the world stage would trickle down back to your pocketbook, perhaps. Depending on your desire to travel, it may impact your ability to go from place to place. As we described earlier, fuel prices in Europe is going to have a very serious impact on your ability to visit.
Anything going on in the district coming up, Jackie, we should talk about?
There's not much left going on after July 4th. As I tell my friends at the State House, I just got to get out of July 4th events, and things slow down really till we get to August Moon Festival.
All right, yes, yep.
And September is Chowder Fest in Hell's Neck. So those are the next big events. I know there's something going on in Germantown on Bignell Street. There's a family fun day coming up in mid-July on a Saturday. But at this point, we're really focused in on being on call for session. Obviously, continue to do constituent services, off hours from the State House. I mean, campaigns with a conversation internally, and the Speaker's office, or the Speaker's PAC, more accurately, has been working on behalf of the Democrats in the House to obviously work towards re-election and having a successful fall.
It'll be here before you know it.
It will be a reminder that mail-in ballots are coming out soon. I believe July 8th is his first issuance, and which is tomorrow, actually.
That's right.
And it's still not too late if you're not going to be around because it is a pre-Labor Day primary, and you may be on vacation. You can put an order in for mail-in ballot, and Nikki Crispo will probably get you a ballot in like less than 3 days.
Yes, definitely. Because the primary is September 1st.
And if you don't trust the post office, drop it off at City Hall. They'll be happy to help you out there. Or if you're having an issue with your ballot, very strongly suggest you visit the city clerk's people, and they'll walk you whatever in the primary. Thankfully, it's a primary ballot. It's not a final ballot when you still have, I think, seven ballot questions
Yes, I
or
th yeah,
eight.
7 or 8, I think.
Yeah, so that's a whole different issue. We can talk about it if we get to final. But yeah, the primary is September 1. I'm on the primary ballot as well as other folks, but it's going to be a very low turnout, I suspect, because it's pre-Labor Day. And I know people like to go away during Labor Day holiday week. So strongly, again, encourage folks to get their mail-in ballot if you're not going to be here to participate. And I can't speak well enough about the city clerk and her people on helping out on people with ballots and elections and making sure that everyone's counted and it's secure.
Definitely. All righty, here's where we ask you to give out your contact information.
Sure. We're still in room 42. We are staffed. It's 617-722-2370, 617-722-3370. Remind folks that if the Front desk doesn't pick up. I do not control the street, and I still can't change the phone system. I'm getting complaints, and I can't do anything about it. We tried. And you have to wait until you get to the prompt that gets to my name and just hit a button in my office and we'll get the message. One of us will get the message. Tacky.chan@mhouse.gov, tacky.chan@mhouse.gov. That is the email. I am getting swamped as I look at the corner of my computer of all these asks about the Econ Dev Bill right now, to support and oppose certain provisions of it. State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook, we're corresponding Instagram. You can see my comings and goings. There will be no sweaty tacky pictures up this time. Sorry. It was really bad, folks. I will record. And of course, we have MELegislature.gov. Very much encourage again anyone to create a web and log in for themselves and monitor the bills without me and watch our different hearings and sessions. And we have state record. We have a tacky.chan.org. God, we have too many things. It's a resource page and a contact site for us, which people actually do use. They actually do use that contact page. And of course, you can check with Joe in the morning for his 10 minutes briefing on local news. And we encourage again people to email Joe at qatv@qatv.org. Send in a topic of conversation that you'd like to hear about.
Absolutely. Love to hear from folks. We had one last week, our first one in 6 years. So that was great.
Yeah. I do receive some compliments when I go shopping, especially when I'm at Star Market. So we do reach folks. They may
Oh,
not
that's
want
good to hear. Good to hear.
to, yeah. I mean, they like to hear. They may not always agree with what either one of us says sometimes.
That's okay. Yeah.
And that's perfectly fine. I'm just
Yeah.
happy we're listening.
Sure. Absolutely. Thanks so much, Jackie.
Thank you, Joe.